Natalie Donaher, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So for those who might not already know you, tell us a bit about yourself.
My name is Natalie Donaher. I am a candidate for the councillor seat for the new Tantramar municipal structure for my ward where I live in Ward 2, which is the area extending mostly south of Sackville, involving the communities of Frosty Hollow, Westcock, Woodpoint, Rockport, Johnson Mills, and then it actually snakes up quite far behind into the north of Sackville Town Center, taking some of the households on King Street and further closer to Walker Road. So it's an area that has a lot of coastal line. We've had in the past some significant accessibility issues when we had flooding. So my experience with the community is that we were quite involved in the feedback structure for the flooding situation that was happening. And I was on the local service district council or
advisory committee.
Advisory council, that's mm-hmm. right. Among probably 4 or 5 other people that were supposed to be helping the government decide how and where to make amendments to our road structures to keep the flooding at bay and to keep the services for police and emergency first responders accessible, because we were at one point, I think, without services for 4 or possibly more days during a period of time in the last decade, and that was a problem. So the Ward 2 seat is one, there's one seat for the ward, and there are 4 potential candidates, and I am one of them.
Okay. And have you lived in Ward 2 for a number of years?
I have lived in Ward 2 since we purchased a house, a multi-generational home from the Barnes family in 2009. So I grew up in Moncton, as did my spouse, single family, single parent household, and I was excelling at school. And so my route to the stable sort of life that I enjoy right now is through schooling, and I came to Mount A on scholarships, and I drugged my boyfriend at the time, who I married shortly thereafter. He worked at Cookie Cutter and I studied, and we got married in Sackville, and then left for a few years and lived in a different spot, bigger city, and we decided when we were ready to settle down to come back to the Sackville area. And because of my sort of geeky subject matter that I was interested in, there were a few places that I could work, but luckily I had got a job at Mount A, working in the science department there with the students as a technician instructor person. So it's a 9-month contract, but it's pretty stable. And we got that house out in Woodpoint, and we were struck, unfortunately, with a huge structure fire that took our large barn about a year ago. And the community support after that happened just made me so thankful to live in that area. And I had already had multiple interactions because of that LSD advisory committee. But really in the last year, since we had to deal with losing that historic structure and all the downstream effects of insurance and financial instability, it really made me thankful for the community. So when we had this council seat come up, I decided to put my name in.
Yeah. So would you say that's the main sort of reason, like, you know, your reason for wanting to run and take on this role of sitting on the Tantramar Council, which could be a pretty big role, it seems like, large area to cover? What factored into that decision? I guess you mentioned one of the reasons.
Yeah, there were a few reasons. The community support after the fire was a big one. My experience on the LSD Advisory Council was not great. We didn't have any decision-making power as part of that advisory committee. And we, in fact, all resigned in 2021 after several years of attempting to get some movement on some of our issues that were important to Ward 2, and in particular the area that the advisory committee's folks were living in, so resource extraction and the flood management and the emergency response and things like that. So it was very frustrating that we didn't have much of a voice. It didn't seem like the power wasn't really there to make decision-making and policy-making efforts. And so I really appreciate that with Ward 2 having a position on the Tantramar Council, we could maybe have more of an input on decision-making that affects our communities.
Right. And even the whole weight of the entire council is behind you then, if you're going to the provincial government for this or that.
That's right. Yeah. And I was thinking the fire and the advisory committee. And also I just wanted to live my values. I think it's really important to have more people put their name in. We have the highest ratio of, at least last time when I checked the day that the candidacy nominations closed, we had more people seeking that one seat than any of the other wards in terms of ratios of election candidates compared to actual council seats. And when I saw that list, I thought, well, there's lots of people who could do this job. And I thought, no, that's not how democracy works. It should be everyone who is capable and interested in putting their name forward should do so. Hopefully there's a little bit of recognition there that I was willing to serve my community beforehand. And that the more diverse candidates that we have for any one seat, the better we are, because lots of different folks in the community should have their voices heard in the new Tantramar Council.
Okay. In terms of, you've mentioned some of the issues that you think are going to be important for Ward 2. When you're going out and speaking to people, do you have specific issues or positions that you're talking about with them to sort of share your perspective on things, what you're going to be bringing to that council table when you...
Yeah, I feel that a lot of issues that I see that are affecting the community as a whole and like East Coast of Canada as well during and after the pandemic, one of the big things that I am focused on is affordable housing and this move towards sort of investment opportunity, housing as an investment opportunity for sort of large corporations, small corporations, conglomerates, whatever, folks that aren't actually living in the houses and or see housing as an opportunity to make money as an investment. I have such a strong affinity for the housing and old homes that we have in our area that I actually bought an old farmhouse and have put a huge amount of effort and money into fixing it up and sort of trying to keep it as part of our cultural landscape on the East Coast and in Sackville. And so I really see the changes in how the investment firms are looking at housing out here as a negative. And there are other issues as well, including our hospital, that are top of mind. But I feel that the municipal council has a lot of power to make decisions about bylaws that can change the course of how we deal with our housing crisis and affordable housing and the density and where they're built and the sorts of things that we might be able to encourage folks who have the ability to invest in their communities. Like, I know there's an Tantramar Affordable Housing Committee, so I'm really, really excited about lending my efforts, if I don't get on the council, to other citizen committees that deal with that housing issue. And then also the emergency response and sort of extreme climate issues that we, I think, on the coastline especially are going to be facing, where power outages, but really anywhere, we've just seen Hurricane Fiona, can affect folks' housing situation and access to emergency services. And I think it's really a community level grassroots organization, including at the municipal level, that can help us prepare for such events.
Right. Yeah. When you talked a bit about one of the advantages for Ward 2 in the amalgamation, which is that there'll be political representation now, which, like, before there was this sort of representation with no power. So it was sort of very unsatisfying, resulted in a mass resignation from that committee. In Ward 2, do you see some challenges for, you know, that ward as amalgamation takes shape? I mean, like, there is 4 candidates who have put their name forward for that ward, only one seat on that council. Do you have any concerns about representation on that, in how it will work out, or what the challenges are, if that makes any sense? maybe it's not representation, maybe it's something else, but.
Yeah, it's interesting because we have had almost no representation. So our one seat seems quite accommodating. and at the moment, I feel quite thankful. And I know that in some other situations, like in Dorchester, they would have had a sort of governing situation that had many more folks at the table, and that they are reducing the number of people that are elected to their municipal council. And so I don't think that the situation is the same for our Ward 2. We are, if we have that many candidates, then I think that we are in good shape for community engagement, for folks keeping the communication lines open with each other. So all these candidates, I hope that they are going to continue doing some sort of outreach and service for their community, even if they don't get on the council. And I think that we're in a strong position to both represent our ward's priorities at the council, but also organized amongst ourselves to keep our community in talks with each other and the communication lines open.
There is, you know, a fair number of residents who have been paying property taxes to the province at a lower rate than people in town. But of course, as you mentioned, your ward actually includes some people in the former town who will be paying the town rate and people from the former LSD. So there's a mix there. If you're elected, you won't play a part in setting the tax rate for this coming year. That's being decided by the province. But for 2024 and after that, that's going to be a huge part of the job, deciding on the budget, setting the tax rate, that sort of thing. Can you share, you know, some of your thinking about how you see that decision unfolding and what kind of things you're going to be taking into consideration there, mm-hmm. how to keep it fair going forward, but knowing that there's probably some adjustments coming?
Yeah, adjustments being a kind word for increases.
Yes.
I think there are so many of us in the rural areas that are just aware that our taxes are going up and the tax rate is going up and the evaluations of our homes are going up. The assessed values are going up because our neighbors are potentially selling their homes at rates that we weren't buying them at. And so it's a double whammy. And what I can say is that I lean towards fiscal responsibility and frugality in my personal life, born out of probably how I grew up and also some experiences that I've had in the job. Like, I think I was a bank teller when I was a teenager. It was a very unusual situation where I got sort of slotted into this extracurricular activity for entrepreneurship and things like that. My family has quite a strong background in entrepreneurial and small business and medium-sized business, family businesses and things like that. And so I ended up doing this thing as a teenager, and I ended up getting a job at a bank as a bank teller when I was still in high school. It's very bizarre.
Yeah.
And it showed me a whole interesting world of how corporations and large banks are structured, how debt happens, and I got this very fast download of information about how the banking world works. And I've tried to keep that in mind as I make my financial decisions personally. And I always keep that in mind when I do sort of financial work for nonprofits, or in this case, if I get the council seat for the municipality and my ward in particular. So, you know, things that I keep in mind are what things are priorities for my constituents or our municipality, which ones wouldn't be necessarily based on our geography and our local resources and our commercial interests in the area, and to make sure that things are applied fairly. If there's sort of a situation happening where there are taxes being paid or assessments being made by the province, that thing is happening equally across the board, and just ensuring that the numbers are communicated well, that I'm a big fan of like infographics and things like that. So I've been lucky enough to be a treasurer for a couple of nonprofits, and that's how I've tackled those sorts of situations when I've been faced with how do you make financial decisions for either a large organization or in this case a municipality, and clear communication, making sure you've got your priorities set, making sure that any sort of policies are fairly applied, and ensuring that we have good like return on investment in terms of the things that we're putting our money towards.
Yeah. I also want to ask about planning, which doesn't sound like much of a fun thing to ask about, but Ward 2 has a number of rock quarries. That's one of the issues that was a big deal and probably, you know, inspired a lot of the people that were on that local advisory committee that mm-hmm. you sat on.
That's right.
There's also a lot of forested land. Yeah. What kind of role do you think the municipality should have in terms of regulating what happens on those lands? There's, I think, a lot of different opinions out there about, you know, how much something like a municipality should be able to interfere, but also mm-hmm. how much protection it might need, or people's, the impacts being protected from each other. Do you think the municipality can do much there, and should it do more?
Great question. So I think one of the things we're considering as a ward during the LSD times and then now that my neighbors talk about often is resource extraction, sustainable resource extraction, responsible resource extraction. And we don't necessarily have to reinvent the wheel there. There are there's forestry and aquaculture and rock quarrying that happens all over the place. So what are other municipalities regulating, if anything at all? And my experience with the LSD is that it is nice to have a feedback structure. So folks that are having problems with their well water quality or their quality of life because of their resource extraction, noise pollution, light pollution, potential flooding, you know, all those sorts of things that might happen after unregulated resource extraction happens, should have a feedback mechanism. And I think there is a place for outlining responsible and sustainable methods that respect the folks that are living in the areas. I don't want to be sort of a NIMBY not in my backyard, because I use rock quarried from local areas for our barn rebuild when we lost our barn. And so I know that those resources are being put to good use. It's just that I would like to have some sort of structure there to make sure that it is done respectfully to the people that are still in the neighborhood or living in the neighborhood, and that we aren't making other aspects worse, like flooding, if there are no more trees available. And I definitely have a research background. I love doing research. I made my career out of doing that. And I like to talk to other municipalities and other areas where these particular sorts of activities are happening and see how they have dealt with it. We don't have to reinvent the wheel always. We just have to make good use of our community ties and talk to people who are in the same situation and see what works for them and what doesn't.
I'm going to just add this in here because you had mentioned roads and flooding a few times, and you're right, Ward 2, that's, you know, a huge issue out there. What would you like to see Tantramar do, like represent those concerns with the province? Or, I mean, how do you, you know, what do you think you're going to, what would your tack be, your strategy be starting out there?
Right. Much like hospitals and healthcare, roads and DTI are provincially regulated things. So I remember trying to give some feedback to the province about where we thought there were some deficiencies there. So having hopefully a town council and a municipal backing on such efforts to get the province's ear about issues in Ward 2 would be definitely something that I would look forward to. And, you know, there are certain, we see as residents, I think we see some clear paths forward for amending access to resources, because we would only have one timely route from our emergency services to the areas that extend down to Rockport. And if they're blocked either by a train or by a flood or by some other thing we haven't quite figured out, icy roads, then we can have if we have multiple access points to the peninsula, we might not be such in a tricky situation. And when we were flooded out for multiple days, folks were taking the backwoods roads, and there were lots of residents who remembered when the road was in better shape. And there was questions about who owned the road and whether it was provincially or whether it was privately owned. And those are sorts of situations that we could clarify with a little support from our municipality, where we didn't quite have that previously.
Okay. All right. This is just a quick one, we're winding down here, but do you, if I asked you like a bit of a best and worst of this amalgamation, what would you say is the sort of most positive thing that's coming out of this? And what would you say is going to be the most challenging thing that's coming out of this?
I have it in my head that the best thing is the seat. The best thing is the seat on the council. And the worst thing is that we have to pay for it financially because our taxes are going up. So that's the exchange. I would have loved to have representation without having the increased tax rate. But I really do believe that we're having a conversation in our communities I would love to know what Dorchester is doing in terms of their resource management and things that I have met some of the candidates before, but I've never had a formalized or structured way to communicate with those folks. And I think that this is one of the best parts about this new town council structure. I just want to make sure that when our finances are hit as households, that we have a positive reason for that.
Right. But there's actually something,
that it's worthwhile,
right?
That it's productive, that it's strengthening to our community and not divisive or scandalous or problematic, or, you know, yeah. I just like have a lot of, I have personally put a lot of effort into attempting to increase my ability to communicate and team build and find commonalities with folks that I work with, even if we're from different backgrounds or have different priorities. And I really hope that those sort of skills could be put into use in this new council structure.
Awesome. Is there anything else you want people in Ward 2 to know?
I was trying to think about this. It's so interesting. I was quite unsure about to put my name in or not. As I mentioned, it was sort of a last-minute decision. Because the building of a new structure after our fire was a lot of effort, and dealing with insurance and everything like that. And I just thought the longer it went and I didn't put my name in, the worse I personally felt, because I thought, I did this before, and I could be the person that does it again. And I really, really appreciate our community. And so I would be like considered a reluctant politician, maybe, or a cynical do-gooder or something like that, where I've seen, because of the resignation en masse in 2021 and the sort of wall we hit with the provincial government in terms of getting our issues listened to before, I already have a little chip on my shoulder, I would say, but I do still feel like it's worthwhile, and so that's why my name went in.
All right, well, best of luck, Natalie.
Thank you very much, Erica.